Welcome to For the Love of Dogs with Dennis Wolf.
And what a wonderful, beautiful September day. I love when we have great weather because, you know, it's nice because our dogs really enjoy it. Not only do we enjoy not being out in the heat, but the dogs, especially older dogs or brachiocephalic dogs, which is a big word for the snub-nosed dogs like boxers and pugs and French bulldogs and such. But at least, you know, at this point now, we start realizing that, you know, we're getting ready to change seasons here. So there are certain things that do happen. And one of those things is the barometric pressure and just the pressurization in general around us can impact dogs quite a bit. Dogs can get what we call colic, just like horses. They can get belly aches. You might notice that particularly with the full moon we had last night, people are driving crazy and they're not, you know, paying attention. And that really does happen with dogs. Sometimes you'll get dogs who are acting differently. If you think about the wolves howling at the moon, well, that's a full moon. There is really something to it. So let's look at it as for the love of your dog, let's figure out how to solve these problems. What do you do when you have literally the best dog in the world, and he's 2 or 3 years of age, and all of a sudden, he attacks another dog, unprovoked? We say, oh no, that must have been something that just kind of happened. It must have been an anomaly, right? It must have been just something that happened that will never happen again, and then it happens again, and now we have a behavioral issue. So let's discuss that, because a lot of these things can be tied actually to the fact that the moon and the lunar cycles do impact dog behavior the same way they affect people's behavior. What can you do when the summer changes into fall? Well, one of the things you can do is make sure that you start getting your dog ready and his belly ready by using some probiotics. Probiotics are actually great at any time of the year, but especially during seasonal changes or before and after thunderstorms and other events. When dogs get stressed out and they start to feel, well, you know, a little bit shaky or a little nervous or anxious, and one of my favorite patients, his name is Kobe, started having just randomly for a couple of days had these really odd shaking spells where his head was shaking, almost like a wobbler syndrome. It was kind of a crazy thing. And what we did is we made sure he was hydrated and gave him a little bit of actually honey, which is a great thing if your dog, of course, speak with your veterinarian, but a common thing when dogs get overheated or under stress and they don't drink, they can become dehydrated. The same way as you might have a headache or be a little snippy with somebody, even those you love, when you're not hydrated properly, and dehydration can cause that. So giving them a little bit of broth, of chicken broth or salmon broth or beef broth, something they're not allergic to. And you can even check with your vet, but adding some local honey to it, like a teaspoon of local honey. And they love it, and it gives them that little quick boost with a little bit of blood sugar, and it hydrates them. So that actually worked wonders for Kobe, and he didn't have the problem again. And of course, then I sent them back to their vet just to check, because you should always check anything out with your veterinarian, especially if you go on you know, some of the social media sites and you ask a question and you have people who don't have a lot of knowledge, and they'll tell you all kinds of crazy things. Well, before you start changing anything with your dog, and even if I tell you something, check it out with your vet, because your vet is the one who, whether they're good, bad, or indifferent, is responsible for your dog. And if you don't have that kind of relationship with your veterinarian, then you need to find one whom you can trust and who is going to be there for your dog no matter what, so that you're able to, you know, give your dog the best. So another thing that's kind of interesting is we're going to talk about at the second half of the show today. It's National Service Dog Month, and we're going to discuss that and the differences with dogs and what they are and how they are perceived. But let's talk about this as, hey, every dog Every single dog in this world, every animal, every person should be treated with respect. They should also be cared for properly, right? We have sometimes children who aren't cared for properly and they end up in foster care. And sometimes dogs end up in foster care or in a shelter, rescue groups. Well, why does that happen? Well, let's go back to the beginning of the show today. They have behavioral changes. You know, no puppy is born and it comes out of its mother with shark teeth and starts, you know, attacking its litter mates when it's born. Things happen slowly over time, and there is a definite progression. And that progression is what we're going to talk about. When do you need to get help for your dog? So I joke with people when they call me, because most of the time people call me and they go, my dog bit my neighbor. And we just thought because he's a little bit strange. But then my dog bit my son's friend, who he knows since he was born. And then he just bit my husband. And he's bitten three people. And I don't know what's wrong. What could it be? Well, the first thing that you really want to do, and I'm telling you this from the heart, go to your veterinarian. You know that there are certain conditions that your dog could have, ranging from Addison's disease to Cushing's disease to hypo or hyperthyroidism to reactions to vaccinations, especially like things like Lyme disease, the Lyme vaccination, and some dogs can actually cause a Lyme-like event, and that can cause some dogs to be a bit unusual or random in their behavior. Other things that can be, so we're talking about thyroid. There are other things like a heart murmur. I remember a beautiful Rottweiler, absolutely gorgeous dog. And the family had him. And this dog, I could put my ear up against this dog's chest without a stethoscope. And I could hear this murmur. You could feel it. You could almost put your hand on his chest and feel it. He had probably a 4 or 5, grade 4 or 5 heart murmur. And he became randomly aggressive, and he was the sweetest dog in the world, but he had this heart murmur, and a heart murmur that is very pronounced or moderately pronounced can also cause health issues. So when your dog, who's been the best dog in the world, starts acting randomly, don't wait for the second time he bites. Don't wait for the lawsuit. Don't say, oh, we got lucky. He didn't clamp down too hard, because that's somebody who has 2 years from the date of that bite, who can come back not only and sue you, but can ask for the dog to have a dangerous or vicious dog designation, which is definitely not something you guys ever want to have. So here I sit or with my Rhodesian Ridgebacks and Wispa and Wyatt and Savannah and let's see who's here, Lexi, my little rescue, and Romeo and my gorgeous Bella, who I got back, and she's so happy to be home. And we have, of course, Savannah, we have Brandy, and we have, I don't know who I'm forgetting, but we have all of them, and Kira's out showing. So what do you do when you have more than one dog? Well, most people don't have a huge pack, but what do you do when you have a couple of dogs and that one dog is, oh, no, he's fine with the other dog? Remember, if a dog starts acting like a person, starts acting unpredictably, there's no saying that your dog won't hurt the other dog. So please don't wait. We just had that literally with one of our service dogs. The young lady has been fostering this dog for a couple of months, our dog, and her dog, who I'm not going to say what breed it is, what combination of breeds, because it's what you're thinking, but it doesn't matter. The dog randomly was just in the yard and just literally attacked this 130-pound Rhodesian Ridgeback service dog who was going to be placed very soon, and put some pretty severe lacerations and did a lot of damage to his side, because of course he didn't fight back. So it's the first time this 2-year-old dog has ever done that. So what didn't most people do? They say, oh, well, you know, it was just random. It must have been over a toy. It must have been over something. Guess what? The chances of it never happening again are pretty minimal. And the chance that it's going to happen and possibly happen to a smaller dog or to a person or to, God forbid, to an infant where someone could get mauled or die are pretty significant. The most people, though, do call me for help at 1-855-449-9288. Most people do call me or reach out to us at 855-449-9288. And they say, hey, Janice, or one of your team around the country and around the world, we are looking, we have a problem with one of our dogs. And for whatever reason, the dog bit somebody, or the dog jumped up on grandma, or the dog knocked someone down, or the dog, you know, is eating everything in the house, or the dog is destroying the house, or whatever it is. And they think that because it happens once that it's not going to happen again. Well, kind of unfortunately, not the case. Generally speaking, once you get into a behavioral issue where, let's say, you know, the dog is starting to act in an unconstant, you know, like kind of an uncharacteristic way. And now you think, well, you know, I mean, it's not a big deal, right? Because dog's never done that. But now the second time the dog does it, it's almost always much more significant. And if we go to a third time, that's where you really have problems. So don't look at that as, you know, oh, wow, you know, it'll never happen again. Because that's like when a spouse promises the other spouse, oh, honey, I'll never cheat on you. Well, once they cheat on you and promise they'll never cheat again, your trust is broken, right? So today we're going to discuss what you can do. One of the great things that we can do is to get my book, which is really, from what everybody reviews and says about it, is really well written, and it's very easy to understand. I go into the scientific basis of some of the behaviors that dogs can have and that can develop. I go into the etiology, in other words, what happens, how this manifests itself, what chemistry or what incidents in that dog's life might have potentially led to these issues. And most of all, how to fix it. You know, if you just change the way you're behaving and the way you're treating your dog, do you know the dog is going to change too? Think about someone who has kind of a not so great marriage. Gosh, we all know those people, right? Well, what happens is when people start to get snippy with each other, right, it starts breaking down the relationship. So let's put that into a human-dog relationship. The dog is picking up on your energy. So maybe you're angry or anxious or frustrated or nervous, or you're losing your job, or you're fearful of losing your job. Whatever is going on, you're in that state of mind. Now, when your spouse or your significant other is in a bad mood, does he or she have to tell you that, like, there's a problem, or do you kind of know? Because you can feel that, you can kind of just know that your spouse or that your significant other is not in the normal, happy, or, you know, normal way that they are. So what that means is now you're picking up on those signals, right? You are starting to be affected and impacted by the energy of the person you're living with. Well, isn't that the exact same thing as what happens with the dog? So let's say your spouse or significant other has a problem at work, or God forbid, you know, has an infidelity issue. They always say, oh, the wife always knows, right? Well, the wife knows because she can tell, because she knows her significant other and how he or she is behaving. And that's why men always say, oh, you know, how did you know what's going on? Because you behave differently. You might get a haircut more often. You might lose weight. You might dress a little nicer. You might take a phone call and you act a little distant, right? So the same way as a spouse can tell when their spouse is having an affair potentially or having a problem, is the same way that a dog can tell when the owner is having a problem. So whatever stress you bring home, the dog is going to be realizing that there's something wrong. And sometimes, very often, That's enough to change the dog's behavior. It actually changes the way the dog perceives you. So if you're a strong, confident, kind of boisterous, happy person, and now your parent is ill, or your best friend dies, or you lose your job, or something bad happens to one of your kids, God forbid, and you come home, and that dog knows that there's something wrong. Your dog knows you better than you know yourself. So you come home, and instead of you coming in the door and, "Hey, Fluffy, how you doing, buddy? I love you." You come home, "Hey, Fluffy, yeah, it's not a good day." And now the dog doesn't understand what you're saying, but he understands how you're feeling. And these are things that are really critical. So if you have, let's say, two dogs, and one of your dogs is very ill, or your other pet is very ill, and you come home and you're acting very sad and depressed, you're going to potentially spur even a fight between the two dogs. Because that one dog, the more dominant or the more confident one, who's kind of putting itself into the leadership role, is going to feel like, uh-oh, there's something wrong with you. And you know what? Survival of the fittest, natural selection, the strong destroy the weak. If somebody in nature is trying to take over your pack, your family, or is presenting a danger to your group, they're going to attack it or potentially kill it. Now, that's certainly not something that happens often, but remember, nobody ever calls me and says, "Hey, Janice, I got the best dog in the world. Come and hang out and have some tea and cookies." Nobody calls me for that. They call me because they have a serious behavioral issue. Some of them have been to veterinarians and behavioral veterinarians who give them medication and nothing happens, or the dogs are drugged up, or they go to a local obedience trainer. And hey, obedience is great for fun and for competition and for certain things that you want to do. But if you have a dog with behavioral issues, obedience doesn't fix behavior. It masks it. You can tell the dog off or down or leave it, but the dog is still doing that. So the point with behavior is to alleviate that problem before it happens. Don't wait until the dog jumps on somebody to say off. Don't turn your back on the dog, because now he learns that, oh, if I want my dopey human to turn around, all I have to do is pretend to jump and he'll turn around, turn his back to me. Look at those humans. They can learn. They're not as dumb as we think. So what do you do for behavior? Well, today we're talking about energy. We're talking about the relationship between your energy and your dog's behavior. So if your energy drops because you have a horrible life event or something sad, or you're just depressed, or perhaps you have an illness, or you suffer from clinical signs of depression, which, you know, everybody's like, oh, it's a psychiatric dog, psychiatric service dog. No, you know, when you're that crippled, and I listen, Merlin's Kids, which, you know, is our organization that we train service dogs. And we've been doing this longer than pretty much anybody out there other than some of the guide dog and hearing dog agencies. We've been doing this for 3 decades. And I've seen it time and time again where, you know, people have a psychiatric issue, right? You have, you know, MPD, or you have, you know, you're bipolar, or you suffer from depression or extreme anxiety. If you're that crippled that you can't, and I don't mean crippled physically, but emotionally, you're that devastated because of the, you know, the extent to which you are not able to function, I'm sorry, but that is no longer a psychiatric issue. That is a physical issue. And we'll talk about it later with service dogs. You know, when you have a physical issue, you need to have that support. So if you have, let's say, an issue like we're discussing, and, you know, perhaps you have, you know, some problems or some things going on, you know, your dog is going to pick up on it. Even your cat will pick up on it. But your animals are going to pick up on the fact that something is wrong. So, you know, fake it till you make it. I don't know, maybe, but it sure does seem to me that a very, very important part of all of these different conditions is learning how to control them so that your dog is able to then, you know, look at you as the strong parent, as a confident parent, and not as a weak child. And that's really the relationship. It's about energy. So you can go on to our website, which is a wonderful way to learn a lot in a very short time. And there's over 1,000 pages beside my book, Happens, SHHH Happens, Dog Behavior 101, which you can get on Amazon. SHHH Happens, exclamation point, Dog Behavior 101. That is a great book. It's about a 2-hour long read. You can get it on Amazon and download the free Kindle software. It's a great way to learn how to change your dog's behavior in a natural way. And the reason it works all the time is that it's the way dogs think. But the other way is Wyatt's List. Wyatt's List is an incredible, just consolidated area of knowledge where you can literally ask any question. You know, the problem with the internet, and it is great, of course, since Al Gore invented the internet, it is a great thing because you can get all kinds of information. But the problem that I see with it is you don't know what you don't know. You don't know who it is who's saying, you know, oh, you should do this. That you can look up, how do I handle my aggressive dog, or how do I deal with my dog who's jumping? You'll get everything from kick him in the chest, knee him in the chest, give him a cookie, tell him off and give him a cookie, make him go to a spot, like a specific place so that he goes there instead of jumping. Oh my gosh, why would you work that hard? Why don't you just teach your dog not to jump? Why don't you just teach him, I love you, don't jump on me. Don't wait until your kid is in the middle of Route 80 and then tell him, get out of the road. He's already gotten hit by a car. Don't do that. It is so, so much better for you to just take that few minutes whenever it happens, whenever this thing happens, and use it as a teaching moment for your dog. Let him know that, hey, I love you to death, but you're not allowed to jump. Or, hey, I need you to, you know, do this, but you're not allowed to do that behavior. And then he learns, or she learns, that it's not a good idea. But what do we do as humans? Well, we talk to them, we give them cookies, we shock them with a e-collar, you know, shock collars. You know, there, it's just really, it's really frustrating. And you know, one of the other things that I wanted to mention is with these e-collars, even the best of the best obedience trainers or police dog trainers who use these things will tell you, you don't just zap a dog, because especially with a fearful dog or an uncertain dog, you're going to wreck that dog. They're very, very intense tools to use, and they have to be used very carefully. And it's the same thing as, you know, people who, and I've seen it, people throwing things at a dog, like some of these crazy companies, the one from Australia, right? They throw things at your dog. I mean, if you started throwing things at me, I'm not going to be your friend. I'm definitely not going to trust you. So why would you want to throw something at your dog? Why would you want to squirt him in the face or in the eyes with water or with like citronella or lemon juice or vinegar? Like, why would you do that? How much trust are you going to have, and how much of a relationship, if your dog is afraid of you? So especially if you have a dog who's fearful or has, you know, those kind of issues, I don't want you to do things that are going to further take away and detract from the relationship you have. The best thing we have with our dogs is the relationship where they trust us, where they know that they can count on us. It's like your children. If your kids came to you and every, you know, fifth or 10th time, you just smacked your kid in the face and your kid would be like, I'm not going to mom anymore. I'm not going to dad anymore. I don't know what to expect. So your energy affects your dog's behavior. It really affects your dog's behavior. So let's think about that. How can we change? Well, you know, you're going to think this is crazy, but take up yoga, take up singing, go to the gym, do something to funnel either your angry or anxious or frustrated or fearful or nervous energy away from your dog. So if you come home from work because you can't stand your job, don't start getting angry. Maybe go to the gym for a half hour before you come home, or go have a cup of coffee and relax, or go do something. Go see a friend for a quick, thing of sushi. Because what that's going to do is then you come home, and instead of coming home angry or frustrated or anxious, you're coming home confident, calm, relaxed, and you're going to feel better, and your dog's going to feel better too. So we're going to actually take a short break and hear from our sponsors, and then we're going to come back with From Shelter Dog to Service Dog in just a moment. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. And welcome back to From Shelter Dog to Service Dog with Janice Wolf. Well, today we're going to discuss about how service dogs, because that's National Service Dog Month, how service dogs can help and what the difference is between the skills and tasks that they can do, and also the difference between and among different organizations or individuals who train or claim to train these dogs. So one of the things that is a big differentiator is how long and how many dogs have been trained. So how long have you been doing this job? So think about it. If you were going for a brain surgery, do you want the surgeon who is first year undergrad or maybe second year undergrad? Or do you want the surgeon who graduated 25 years ago and has done, 80,000 of the same exact procedure, right? Well, with service dogs, you're obviously not going to have 80,000 of them, but it is really important because people don't know what they don't know, and sometimes buyer beware, So if you have, caveat emptor, right? It's buyer beware. It's be careful what you do and who you get involved with. So there's also something called self-trained. I call it self-guided or guided self-trained dogs. So with the service dog, the big difference between a service dog and your pet is that the service dog is task trained. So you can't just take your dog anywhere because you feel better. Because let's face it, all of us, that's why we have dogs, right? Because they make us feel good. But a service dog is considered as an assistive device, kind of like a cane or crutches or, pair of glasses or wheelchair. And it's the same exact thing. So you have to really look at it as what tasks is your dog going to need to learn and to not just do once in a while, but to do often. They have to be able to do this often. They have to be doing it reliably. So if you have a dog and you want to self-train your dog, well, that's always a great thing. Because self-training is fine. There's no reason you can't do that. But you need someone who is extremely knowledgeable and is going to be really honest with you too. The biggest issue I find is with local obedience trainers or dog trainers who can be fantastic at obedience and other different types of work like that and training. But service dog training is a whole other thing unto itself. When you're training a service dog, that dog has to be 100%. That dog has to be, first of all, healthy, sound, able to move right, able to have the body and mind required for that dog to be able to not only learn how to do what it's required to do, but to do it anywhere at any time. So imagine for a second if you have a dog who detects seizures or a dog for mobility. Well, now you have this dog who is 90% of the time, this dog is amazing. It does everything 90% of the time. Well, what happens if that 10% of the time is when you happen to be walking somewhere on the side of a road and you pass out and fall into the road and get run over by a car? Well, I mean, we hope that doesn't happen, but that kind of stuff does happen. It really does. So the dog can't be 90%. He can't be chasing squirrels and cats. He's got to be focusing on you. He can't be running away from something that looks scary because he could drag you with him. So you do have to have somebody who is not only knowledgeable, but very honest and knowledgeable about your disability. Your disability is the reason that your dog can become a service dog. So about 1 in 100 dogs has what it takes to become a service dog. Most of the time when people reach out to us at merlinskids.org, they reach out to us and they'll give you the number if you have an interest in learning how to train your own dog to become a service dog or in training service dogs for others. It's 855-449-9288, which is 1-855-HI-WYATT. And if you do have a dog who you say, wow, you know, he really is a good dog. And people call me all the time, oh, I have a really good dog. And I'm saying, oh, great. What do you want the dog to do? Well, I don't know. Well, if you don't know what the dog should be doing, then why are you going to hire somebody who also doesn't know what you're doing? You need to get involved and really be looking at not these things on social media that say, hey, train your service dog in 20 minutes and he's going to be a great dog. It takes our dogs 1 to 2,000 hours. Okay, 1 to 2,000 hours to be trained to be a service dog. And then on top of all that and public access exposure, another 3 to 6 months minimum of additional public access exposure at one of the universities around the country. So you end up having a dog who has been on the bus 300 times. He's been on planes. He's been on trains. He's been in the classrooms. He's been in supermarkets and restaurants and movies and Broadway shows. We do that with every single one of our Merlin's Kids dogs. Guess what? Most people don't do that. Most local trainers, they can be fantastic at training a dog to sit or lie down or, you know, do tricks or whatever, you know, maybe even housebreaking and things. And there's some very, very competent, excellent trainers out there. But the same way as you wouldn't have your dermatologist crack your head open when you needed a brain surgeon, you'd want the brain surgeon. So this is one of those specialties. And the person who or the organization who trains your dog has to sit down with you, learn about your disability, learn what you need, when you need it, be honest with you about whether or not that dog is even going to be suitable, because unfortunately, most of the time, the dogs are not suitable. 9 times out of 10, when I get a phone call that's the best dog in the world, the dog is still not suitable for the purpose. It may be too old. It may be too small, too big, have a bad hip. It won't last. You don't want to take a dog and put all that time into it and then take a chance that this poor animal is going to break down and not be able to help you, and it's going to need help. So I really want you to think about this. Make sure that no matter what, that you're honest about what you need, what your dog needs, and find if you're looking for a trainer or you're looking for somebody. Remember, we do this as well at Merlin's Kids. You can call us or go on merlinskids.org, look up the personal service dog PSD class. And what you can do is this way you can potentially self-train your dog, but it's, like I said, guided self-training. So you're not on your own. You're doing the work. And granted, you know, it's going to be your first one you're training. So it's not going to be as good as you know, the 1,000th dog I've trained or the 1,300th dog I've trained. I joke, the first 100 service dogs I trained were my throwaways. I joke that not that they were not good, they were phenomenal, but compare the first 100 to the last 100, the last 100 out of the 1,300 or the last 1,000 have been phenomenal. And the dogs can do a lot of different tasks, but you have to be realistic. One of the things I hear sometimes is people saying, "Oh, well, I'm, you know, somebody's training the dog to, you know, to go find a person down the road and, you know, get me help." Well, if the door is locked in that time, it's deadbolted and the dog can't get out the door and the windows are closed, how is the dog going to go to get anybody? So you have to think about it. Well, how about if I'm in a hotel? So now you have to train the dog how to open door locks, right? Which can be a problem also, because now you have a dog who, like Wispa and Bruiser and Wyatt, and on my house, if I stand at one side, or I stand inside my house or outside my house, and I call, like especially with Wispa, she'll jump this 6-foot fence like nothing. She'll just pop right over it. If it's a deadbolt lock, she will open the deadbolt. She will open the door with her mouth. And then she will put her paw in it and pull the door back. And then she will open the next door and she will get out or in or wherever because she's wicked smart. But she's also been taught to do that. So when I go to a hotel, the first 5, 10 minutes, I show her how to open the door because if I'm in trouble and I'm laying there and I'm having a problem and I need help and there's no phone or whatever. And, you know, of course, I would teach her where the phone was, but, you know, I have to show her how to open that door. It only takes her a minute because she's so brilliant, but, you know, you have to think about it. And then if you have, let's say, the first time the dog ever sees the chain lock and the dog is trying to go find somebody, well, even if you do a phenomenal job of getting that dog to be able to go get help, if the dog is, you know, puts its paw through a glass window or, you know, God forbid the dog, you know, doesn't know how to open something, you know, now all of a sudden he's not the service dog that you need. So there's so many different aspects. And the other thing that's probably the most important is making sure the dog is suitable for the job. Don't pick, you know, a hairy lab or golden when you have really bad allergies and you're starting to train the dog and you're allergic to the dog. Don't get a dog who's super prey driven. Like a border collie, which are great dogs, but not always the best choice for trying to not, you know, guide them. So you know they're always looking, right? The border collies and the dogs like that are always looking around. That's what they do. They're very sight driven. So if you live, you know, in an area and you're not using your dog for what you should be doing. Instead of that, you look at it and you say, "Well, wait a minute. My dog is, you know, is a great dog, but, you know, he's too prey driven. So if your dog needs to go find help and all he's doing is looking for chipmunks, it's not going to be the right dog. So how do you find that right dog? Best thing is, if you do need a service dog and you have a legitimate need, then find a reputable agency, and I say reputable, and ask them. What I tell people to do that I think is the most logical, you know, in the days now of internet and all that, you can Google, you can look up an organization, and you know, yeah, it's possible that, you know, an organization's going to have one or two people who aren't happy because whatever happens in life, you know, you're going to have that somebody's not happy. But if you find hundreds and hundreds of good reviews and you know you look at it and you say, wow, look how many times they've been on national TV, and look at how many times you know the dogs have saved people, and look at, you know, all this. You can tell, you can get a feel for who's good and who's not. But if somebody says, "Oh yeah, I train service dogs and I train obedience and I train police dogs and I train da da da," and they haven't been around as long as I've been around, which is a long time, they probably can't do it. It takes years and years to become good at something. It takes so long just to be able to do those skills. So be careful. Don't get your local obedience trainer or your local police dog trainer. If you need that dog trained to be a service dog, it's not the same as a police dog. A service dog is very different. A service dog has to want to be with you. The service dog has to be able to physically and emotionally and behaviorally handle whatever's around. What do you do, like I said at the top of the hour, when our service dog was 130 pounds, was attacked by the, yes, it was what you're thinking, but this dog was attacked and the other dog didn't have a scratch on him because our dog knows I'm not supposed to fight. So he got hurt because he didn't fight back. But if you have a dog, it's a service dog, and another dog lunges at your dog or growls at him, and your dog takes that as a sign of, an attack. Now your dog lunges at that dog and starts biting that dog or whatever. Now that is no longer service dog. Service dogs cannot have any aggression. That's why it's so hard to find that dog that's going to be perfect, the one that's going to love you, who's going to be with you, who's going to want to be with you more than it's going to want to chase the squirrel, who's going to want to help you and take care of you more than, let's say somebody who is, let's say like a sweet old golden retriever, because, goldens are such adorable little guys. But a lot of goldens, they're so friendly, like with everybody. So would that be a good service dog? Well, maybe not. Because if the dog is focused on a lot of people and not just focused on you, then he's going to be a better therapy dog, right? He's going to be better at being a therapy dog than he's going to be at being a service dog. A service dog needs to ignore all else around him. The service dog needs to make sure that he's able to take good care of you and, keep you as the primary. And if you're not going to be, potentially doing things for your dog and making sure that your dog is, is doing the job just for you, he might be more interested in others. And if he is more interested in other people than in you, then, he's going to be probably a better therapy dog. So let's talk about that. What's a therapy dog? A therapy dog is a good, happy, sweet, gentle, wonderful dog who loves everybody, who's calm or maybe sometimes not calm, but has no mean bone in his body. He's there's no aggression. They're looking at different people as different revenue streams for food, right? Ooh, maybe they'll have a cookie. Oh, maybe they'll have me do a trick. And those are the dogs who go to hospitals or go and read to the little kids read to them. And they're great. And a local obedience trainer would be a super help for something like that. Because with do those dogs, you can use food. You don't want to use e-collars with a dog that you want to be a therapy dog because sometimes they can get afraid of having their neck touched because they know the collar is going to zap them. Or give them some kind of a vibrational shock or vibration there. Again, the idea being that, the dog is able to do a job that is going to be best suited for him. So, for the most part, what we want to try to do is choose the dog who's going to be the right match and right fit for the job that he's going to do. So if you say, hey, I really want to do a I really want to do have a service a therapy dog, you don't want that dog who's going to end up being like for a therapy dog, you don't want that dog who's going to be aloof and only follow you. You want the dog who's going to be really, really happy, to be around other people and to do all the things that, that he is going to need to do as a therapy dog. And there are, that's a great thing. If you just have to have a good dog who's basically pretty gentle and a dog who likes to be around people. And it's a lot of fun to have a therapy dog, go visit hospitals and such. But a service dog is protected under the Americans with Disabilities Act. A service dog is protected because of the disability of the handler or the owner. And that's where, you really have to know kind of what you're doing in order to make sure that you're choosing the right dog or giving your dog the right job. Otherwise, you're probably going to have a very confused dog. Now, there's another kind of dog called an emotional support dog. Now, what's an emotional support dog? Well, you can actually find, if you go on to wyattslist.com, W-Y-A-T-T-S-L-I-S-T, W-Y-A-T-T-S-L-I-S-T.com, you can go on to wyattslist.com and you'll see how to fix things, how to work with dogs, how to see the difference among and between all the types of dogs. And, you know, the key is really for an emotional support dog or for any of these dogs is having a dog who's well-behaved. If your dog isn't well-behaved, you're not going to go anywhere. So an emotional support dog is a dog that makes you feel better. And guess what? I think pretty much almost everybody who has a dog because it makes us feel better. So to me, all dogs and all pets are emotional support. I mean, why do we get kids hamsters and, you know, gerbils and little mini mice and bunnies, right? Because it feels good to pet the fur or their feathers, right? It does feel good and it's relaxing. So they are our emotional support animals. But the problem is that I think that it's doing a great disservice to the community at large who has psychiatric issues and different needs. Because if you have a psychiatric issue and you're saying, oh, I have an emotional support dog, do you know how many people really don't need it for any kind of psychological or medical reason? And they just lie and they get a fake letter from some, you know, some bogus therapist who doesn't care if he loses his licensure. But what's going on is it's taking away from people who genuinely need these, the people who have anxiety, but it's not a crippling anxiety, but it's something that helps them to be able to have an easier and better life. And that really, really is important. You have to be able to be honest about that. So for today, I want you to think about how would your dog best be suited? Would your dog not, you don't have to have the disability for today's purposes, but if you did have a disability, if you had something and you needed to train your dog to become a service dog in a year and a half and 1 to 2,000 hours, and then another, let's say 1,000 hours or 500 to 1,000 hours of public access exposure training additionally, what kind of service dog would your dog be able to be? Could he go out on a train, on a plane, on a bus? Could he be in a mall with 50 or 60,000 people, in a stadium or at a concert? I mean, my dogs, I just went to the Paul McCartney concert. I went to the Elton John concert this not too long ago. Went to Billy Joel, went to Springsteen, went to Kenny Loggins. One of my service dogs was with me at each of those because through the years, you know, you have to be fair and not do too much with them because you don't want to burn them out. But my dogs have been in places that you couldn't even believe. They've been with, you know, 80 Longhorn Steer with my friend Temple Grandin when we were out at the Cowgirl Hall of Fame when she was inducted. And, you know, you look at it and you say, how do you train a dog to do that? Well, could your dog do that? If your dog can't do that, or you don't imagine any way your dog could ever do that, then he's never going to be a service dog because they got to have the public access component. The next kind of dog, which a lot of you guys can have and can train, is a therapy dog. That therapy dog can potentially help people in a hospital or kids who don't want to read and are self-conscious, or visiting a school, so or doing a lot of other things. And that's something that about probably one in maybe 7 or 8 dogs can do, because they're gentle and they're calm. And that's something that you can either contact us at merlinskids.org or 855-449-9288, because we do train service dogs, obviously, but we train therapy dogs as well. It's just a little different training, and the public access we have is the same because the dog still has to be social and confident walking around a hospital with noises and screaming, and particularly if you're dealing with young kids or Alzheimer's patients, you never know, they can be unpredictable. And this is why it's just really important to understand your dog's personality and what your dog would be good at. And then if your dog can't be a service dog or a therapy dog, let him be an emotional support dog for you. Let him just be a great dog. But work on fixing his behavioral issues. Call us at 855-449-9288 or unitedk9pros.com and we will help you. Hope everyone has a happy, healthy, wonderful weekend. God bless all of you. Enjoy your pets, enjoy your family, and have a great weekend.